Okay. So, hello and welcome to our computer graphics lecture. So probably most of you were already here when there was this announcement. There's a camera here in the background that will record this lecture. So you can always go back to the website and have a look at the lecture with about 1 week delay. This is a service offered by the students, by the Studiengebühren that also you paid until last semester. So, okay, so my name is Marc Stamminger. I'm going to give that lecture in this term, and I would like to start with some organizational issues about the lecture. So, first of all, I'm not the only one you will be in contact with. We have at least two tutors. It depends on the number of students that will show up and that will register for the tutorials, whether we add further ones. Franziska Bertelshofer is going to give the oral tutorials and the theoretical tutorials, and Christoph Weber will guide you through the programming part, in case you want to do that. I will describe these differences between the tutorials in a minute. If you want to participate in that lecture, and in particular in the tutorials, and to get a grade on the module, you need at least one of these tutorials, then please register using EST. Yeah, okay, people are taking their mobile phones. I will put these slides on the webpage so you can find it also there directly. So please register via EST. I think most of you know that tool, so it should be easy to use for you. And please register until Friday noon. Yeah, so we need to know as soon as possible how many students we have to expect. So that we can organize tutorials and maybe think about a third time slot or whatever for the tutorials. So please register until Friday noon. So via EST, you will hand in your programming assignments. It's a nice tool to do that. Other material for the lecture, for instance, the slides I will show you and probably also link to the video recordings and stuff like that, are available on our webpage. If you go to the webpage of our chair and take the canonical path, teaching, winter term, computer graphics, then you will find material for this lecture and also these slides. So you will also find this link that you can directly click to register with the EST. Okay, about the times. The lecture, I wanted to change that, but we can discuss that. So we have two time slots on Tuesdays from 12 to 14 and on Thursdays from 12 to 14 or 2 p.m. The lecture is 3 hours. Yeah. So in one of these time slots, we only have 45 minutes, or the lecture will only be 45 minutes, and the other one, it will be 1 hour and a half. So a proposal from my side is that we, on Tuesdays, we run the lecture from 12:30 to 2 p.m. That would give you some time for lunch. But that's just a proposal. I'm perfectly fine with any solution. Do you think it would be a good idea to start at 12:30 to have some time for lunch? Yeah? Does anybody disagree? Wow, that was quick. Okay, and on Thursdays, I see no real reason on Thursdays, we can decide whether we want to have the lecture between 12 and 1 or between 1 and 2. For the same reason, my proposal would be between 13 and 13:45. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Ah, I see. So 1:15 would be better for you? Yeah. Yes, taking a bus is probably a good idea. Or taking a bike. Okay? Does anybody disagree? Is it okay? Good. Excellent. So we have times for the lectures. The tutorials will take place on Monday between 10 and 12 and on Thursdays between 4 and 6. Getting slots for these tutorials and in particular rooms is pretty difficult, so we have no flexibility here. Yeah, there's a global room and time planning system running or that ran a few months ago, and that gave us these slots, so we cannot influence that. Is there anybody who has a conflict so that none of these slots is okay? No. Excellent. There's one. So the tool is working. Okay, that's good. And for the programming tutorials, we have a slot here Thursday from 9 to 11. It's this a bit strange time. It's on purpose because in this way it covers two slots from 8 to 10 and from 10 to 12. And in fact, usually the tutor is available until 12. Yeah, so I mean, he will be available until all questions are answered. This will be in the Hubertzip, I think. Hubertzip, is it the official name? It has a room number. You can find it on the Univis. It's in this building where the dean's offices are, and in the lower part there's a particular SIP pool. 0.001. That's easy to remember. In order to be allowed to get into that SIP pool, that's another reason why we ask you to register until Friday noon, because you need a special allowance to get into that SIP pool. So please register, and we will then send the list of students participating to the SIP admins, and then you get access to that SIP pool. Okay, so what's the issue with these two types of tutorials? The idea is the following. The normal computer graphics module has 5 ECTS, and it consists of this lecture here. That was also visible here. It consists of this lecture. This is 3 hours a week of lecture, and this tutorials here. Yeah? So this is 1 hour. So altogether, it's 4 hours. That's 5 ECTS. Additionally, we offer programming tutorials. So that's real programming assignments where you have to write little programs to see things on the screen flying around in wonderful colors and moving and stuff like that. And these last 2 hours. I mean, okay, you will probably need longer. But the tutor is available for 2 hours and probably also longer. And this gives you another 2.5 ECTS. So you can decide what you prefer, yeah, whether you want to do the large or the small version. In fact, I would really recommend to do these programming tutorials because it helps your understanding. It's probably work. But I'm pretty sure that in terms also for learning for the final exam, it's absolutely helpful to have done these tutorials. So if you decide to take the small version, then what you need is 50% of the points of the assignments of the normal tutorials, yeah? And then in the end, there will be an oral exam about 30 minutes. And this decides about the final grade. If you make the large version, you need 50% of the point of the assignments of the normal tutorials and of the programming tutorials. And then there's again an oral exam, about 30 minutes. Yeah, that decides about the grade. Okay, so I think that's quite simple. For these tutorials, we offer, We will provide assignments every week. These assignments, they are both for the theoretical tutorials and for the programming tutorials. So it's separate assignments, yeah? And they are always available. Okay, and that's wrong, sorry. Forgot to change that. On Fridays. So we don't want to spoil your weekend. So the assignments get available on Fridays, and then you have 1 week time, and they should be delivered on Fridays again. Yeah, so 1 week later. Altogether, we will have 10 to 12 assignment sheets. Pretty sure it is 11, I think. Okay, but at least we want to keep some flexibility whenever, whatever. I will be too slow in the lecture or something like that, and we have to delay one assignment. Each of these sheets gives you 10 points, and yeah, in the end you need 50% of the overall available points. These assignments you can do in groups of two persons. Yeah, so if you already know somebody you would like to make the programming assignments with, then it's good. Then you can hand in the assignments as a group, and you, of course, you will both get the available points then. Okay, about the start, tutorials start next week. In the first tutorials, we will mainly explain the modalities, how you can find the assignments, where you can find the program code, and stuff like that. We will also next week provide the first assignment sheet, and then next week this entire circle will start. So the first assignments will be due on October 31st probably November 1st, but that's a holiday, so please remember that. So that's why I wrote October 31st. And October has 31 days, right? Okay. The last lecture will be on February 6th. It's pretty early this year. So the oral exams will probably be in the second week after the last lecture. That's February 7 to 19. Okay. Other dates are possible, but I would really ask you if this time slot here is possible, I would be very happy. It will be quite a few oral exams, and I would be happy to do all that in a 3-day block or so. But if you have some urgent reason, yeah, that is beyond, I would like to go skiing, then I'm flexible enough to offer you other dates. Okay. Is there anything else? Yeah? Yes, there is one. Sorry, I forgot that. But I have it here. Very good point. EST. Yeah, I will put it on the slides. Okay, then I have to make that smaller. But it's not less important, no? Is it user and no, course? Okay, you could have guessed this. Okay, so very good point, thank you. Something else I forgot? Yeah. Ah, okay, sorry.
What do you mean by assignments which are not programming assignments? What it is? How is it possible to have graphics without programming?
Pardon? How?
You have like one sort of modules which are just assignments.
Oh, no. We have two types of tutorials. Yeah? Sort of theoretical tutorials and programming tutorials. Yeah, in the theoretical tutorials, these are typical assignments that you have to write down by hand on a piece of paper and compute something, 3D coordinates of a point after some perspective projection or something like that. Yeah, so this is written assignments. And the programming assignments, you get a skeleton of code and you have to insert code at some place to do something fancy. Pardon?
The deferred rendering we are going to use, or we can move forward.
That's very special, and you will see that. We will both do ray tracing and we will do rasterization. And we will. I will describe a little bit what we will do during the lecture. Yeah?
Any problems to make the assignments alone?
Sorry, I didn't.
Any problems to make the assignments alone?
No, that's no problem. No. One or two people can hand in the assignments. Yeah?
Look at the PC of neighbor, and the views for the assignments are both scheduled on Thursday. Is it wrong and would be corrected?
The what? The dates or?
Are both scheduled on Thursday from 9 to 10 or something like that.
Ah, okay. Ah, yeah, no, okay. Okay, yeah, that's a... Okay, because EST is only for the programming assignments, yeah? And so these groups, they have no relevance. Yeah, I don't know why there are groups. Maybe EST wants them. for the other tutorials, you can visit whatever you want, whatever of these slots. So we don't have a real... system that you have to decide for one of these groups, visit the one that is best for you. And I hope it won't be too unbalanced. Yeah?
So how do we handle the assignments?
The written assignments, we will probably just have a mailbox where we can throw them into. And for the programming assignments, you can hand them in via EST. So you just have to upload them to EST. Okay. Good. So, if there are no further questions on the organizational part, I would like to continue with a brief introduction. just to give you a little bit impression, a bit of an impression, what we want to do during this lecture, what we will hear about, and I also want to show you some applications of the stuff that we are doing, and also would like to show a little bit what we are doing at our chair for computer graphics. So you're in the fifth semester usually, is that right? Most of you, I would guess. So if maybe you plan or thinking about a bachelor thesis or something. So it might be interesting to see what we are thinking about and what typical topics with our chair are. But let me first start with a brief introduction. And I'm really very sorry for that. Yeah. But maybe you realize that my tablet didn't work here together with that projector. And since that happens sometimes, I have a fallback solution here. But this is not able to play that video. So I'm really sorry for that. And I will do my best to show that video on Thursday. I found it yesterday on the web. And you can also find it on YouTube. And it's pretty nice because it describes a system That is kind of the first computer graphics system that was available, and it was in the 50s. It was a very big computer, yeah, with a filling an entire room and a rather small screen. And it was even Sutherland's system called Sketchpad, and it's very, very basic. I mean, it's sort of funny to look at that. So you can draw cubes or something like that with a few lines, and it can rotate these cubes and stuff like that. So it's really very basic, but nevertheless, it's really already for this system, Sketchpad, a number of algorithms have been proposed that are still state of the art. I think it's a neat introduction to a little bit show what we will do in this lecture. So what we can see in the video, or what we could see, is that they are representing objects by their outlines. So when they draw a cube, they just draw the outline of the cube. But at least they have some representation of that cube, of that object. Yeah? And it's interesting to think about, yeah, how can we represent something more difficult, like this projector here or whatever? Yeah. So these are essentially questions of modeling, or what we call modeling in computer graphics. Then they are displaying lines on their system. They do that in a very simple way, because it's a photon beam or an electron beam that really moves from point A to point B by using circuits. Yeah, so this line is really drawn automatically by that system. Today, this line drawing is more complicated. We have raster screens with several pixels, and to draw a line, we have to find the pixels along a line and set them to a certain color. That's more complicated. We will also speak about that, line rendering. And now they represent that cube or these objects only by their outlines. And of course, quickly you realize that if you do so, in that case, you know, that typical example, it's difficult to find out whether this corner here is in front or this here. Yeah, you can, when you look at it for some time, it might flip. Suddenly you think that this one is in front and the other one is in front. And of course, typically, if you want this to represent a solid object, then you want to have these hidden lines removed. Yeah, you want to have something like this. And they also show this in this video, that they have such a hidden line removal algorithm. That's already quite complicated, not for that case, but if you have multiple objects and they, for instance, also penetrate each other, or if one object hides another one, yeah, then these lines get intersected and so on. So that's also something we have to think about. And obviously, yeah, it works. This is the issue of visibility. We will also speak about that. And then perspective. Yeah, our objects that we define live in 3D space. But if we look at them on the screen, you typically get something, yeah, maybe like this. Yeah, this is if we look at a hollow cube from the front. And then you see, of course, obviously, the further something is away from the camera, the smaller it gets and stuff like that. So that's also something you have to think about. And we will also speak about that in the section viewing and perspective. OK, and yeah. Now at this point, I wanted to make a little demo, but of course, this also is not installed on that notebook. I'm very sorry for that, but it's not too exciting what you could see. It is just a more modern system displaying 3D objects, and this is just a more state-of-the-art way of computer graphics. So what you could see on the screen is a teapot. So it consists of curved surfaces. It's not something as simple as a cube. It's with curved surfaces. And this defining such curved surfaces is a typical question also of modeling 3D objects. If you buy a car today, or if you see a car today, you can, and it's not too old, then you can rely on it that this car has been modeled and designed on a computer. And it's a very interesting issue, yeah, how a designer can model such curved, smooth surfaces, or describe these surfaces in a way that it's quite easy for him to add new features, to add a crease or whatever, or to change curvature slightly, and to do that, yeah, in a way, or to describe that mathematically so that the designer can work with it, and on the other hand, that it's also so precise that it can be used to really generate this car later on. And these are issues of modeling, and so modeling is one big part of computer graphics, but we will only have a very look at the very, very basic modeling stuff. We have another lecture at our chair, geometric modeling, where you can learn about this in more detail. Cameras and animation, yeah, we can move around the teapot, we can move forward, backward, zoom onto the teapot and stuff like that. So it's essentially operations like you have with a normal digital camera in the real world. Yeah, you can move your camera around, you can select the arbitrary viewpoint, you can select your view direction, you have a zoom that you can zoom in and zoom out. This is how a camera works. And also, if objects are moving, then we also have animation in the scene. Then, as I said before, these displaying a line on a current raster screen is an interesting challenge. Or challenge is maybe the wrong word. But if we imagine that a screen today consists of lots of pixels, in fact it's millions, and you want to draw a line from A to B, then we have to find the pixels that are intersected by that line. Okay, so that's not a very good solution, but nevertheless. And it's important to be able to do that quickly. Yeah, so there are algorithms that do that in a very nice way, very old algorithms. And the extension would be that you don't have a single line, but a complete triangle. Yeah, and now you want to quickly enumerate all the pixels that are covered by this triangle, hopefully faster than I am able to do that here on the blackboard. And this problem is called rasterization. Yeah? So we have a continuous object, like a line or a triangle or something more complicated. And we want to convert that into a rasterized image. And that's called rasterization. We will also speak about that in the lecture. And then finally, shading. And here the problem is, in our virtual environments, our objects do not have a single plane color, yeah. So it's not that we draw a cube and it's red everywhere. We know it's red, but we don't give it a red color everywhere. But instead, we do shading. That means the color of the object, the red color, has a shading on it depending on, for instance, where a light source is positioned. So if we have a light source here, then directly under the light source, it will be light red. And the further we get away from the light source, it will become darker. That's a typical effect that you get everywhere, or that you see everywhere. And we will speak about how to compute these effects, what models are available to compute such this lighting. Yeah, so how much light is reflected from a light source towards the eye under certain conditions, and so on. How can we model such surfaces, etc. So that's what I call the it's not only shading, we will differentiate this later on. Okay, so just to summarize a little bit, within computer graphics, we could say that we have, there are three major areas. Modeling, yeah, that's how do we describe all these surfaces. Yeah, how do we describe the geometry of the surfaces? And also, how do we describe the reflection of surfaces? How do they reflect light? That's modeling. Then rendering is, so given a 3D scene in the world, how can we generate images from this? Yeah. So there's one big part is rasterization. Then we have shading and other issues that we will see. Yeah? How do we generate an image from a given 3D scene? And then another large area is animation. So you all know these Pixar movies from cinema, for instance, where there are characters with moving animated faces and animated poses and stuff like that. And that's also a very big area where just animating objects is described and researched, and how can we nicely animate or easily and understandable animate objects. So these are three main areas within computer graphics. There are others that you might want to see as a part of computer graphics, but it's not completely computer graphics alone. That's, for instance, user interaction, virtual reality, image processing, 3D range scanning, 3D model reconstruction and editing. These are all areas that are closely related to computer graphics, but also involve other fields. Just to mention these names here. If we take these three areas, modeling, animation, and rendering, and describe them in a kind of pipeline, how they are used, then we would get such a pipeline here. So we start by modeling objects, then we animate them, and in the end, one particular pose of an animated object is rendered, and this gives us our final image. And yeah, we offer a number of lectures that touch all these areas. So as I already said, geometric modeling is describing this modeling part here. In summer term, we have a further lecture, geometry processing, that goes further in this area. Animation, we have a lecture, computer animation and collision detection, that describes animation. And an important part of animation is collision detection. That means it's quite simple to animate. If I throw that presenter, it's quite simple to animate this the movement while it's flying. But as soon as it touches the ground, things get complicated. So you first of all have to find out that it collides. For the ground, that's quite simple. But if I throw it into the audience, that would be more complicated. And in particular, how it reacts. Yeah, if I hit your head, it will react differently than if I hit your belly. And so things like that, in a simpler way, are described here. And in the end, we have rendering. And this is also the main subject of the lecture here, what we will speak about here in computer graphics. That's mainly about rendering. But we also have additional lectures in summer that go further on the rendering aspect. The first one is interactive computer graphics. That's on how we can use GPUs, graphics cards for rendering, how they work and how we can exploit these, and mobile graphics, how to generate graphics on mobile devices. Okay, in this lecture, we will mainly hear about rendering. But we will also have very, very basic modeling, because if you don't have a model, you're not able to render it. So we will describe the absolute basics of modeling so you have models that we can render. But the focus is on rendering. And the task of rendering is always the same. So given is a 3D world, modeled in the computer. Yeah? So you have a 3D scene that could be this lecture hall here, or maybe something larger, maybe the entire world, if you have all data available from Google Earth. So it can be an arbitrary scale. So let's say this lecture hall here. Yeah. So this is given. This world consists of a number of 3D objects. this table, the single chairs, whatever, everything that is available here in this room. And it has the geometry of these objects and the light reflectance properties. Yeah, so it has some description that tells you if a photon hits that surface, what will happen. Yeah? How is it reflected, or probability distributions, in which directions is it reflected, is it absorbed, and stuff like that. Furthermore, there are given light sources. Yeah? So you need to know, if you only have objects that reflect light, but no light source, then it will be dark. So you also need light sources. In this room, obviously, there are quite a few. So we also need descriptions of the light sources, how much light do they emit, into which direction, which color do they have, and stuff like that. And we need a virtual camera. I need to know, I want to generate an image of that room now, but from which viewpoint, for which viewing direction, what is the horizon? I can also roll around my viewing direction. What is the opening angle? Do I have a tele lens or a wide angle lens? And if I have all these parameters, then I can generate a 2D colored image from that. And we will speak about all steps necessary, yeah, to take this as input and generate a 2D raster image from that. And to do that, of course, you need to simulate such a camera. How does a camera work? How does it project the world into image space? And we need to simulate light propagation. We need to simulate how light from the light sources bounces off the objects and gets into my camera. Yeah? So that's the kind of problem description of rendering. And this is what we will speak about. And in rendering, we typically have contradictory paradigms or contradictory goals. So the first one, what people usually are aiming for, is photorealism. That means, ideally, such a rendering should not be distinguishable from a photograph of such a scene in real time. And now, this is very difficult. That's a really difficult goal. But as you all know from cinema and so on, people are getting closer and closer to that. But typically, such photorealism requires rendering time. Yeah, this is very, very expensive in terms of rendering time. So as a simple example, I will show that in more detail here. We have a nice scene, and we compute the illumination in that scene using a very general global illumination model. But after 1 minute and 6 seconds, it's still a very noisy image. We will see that larger in a minute. And to get a really nice solution, it takes 8 hours. Yeah? And in these movies that you see in cinema, for instance, they typically have a rendering time of 15 minutes per frame. Yeah? So you have 24 frames per second. And these 15 minutes are on a real render farm. So it's a real big cluster of computers. So that takes very, very long. But the results are very nice. And on the other hand, we have applications where it's more important that we have real time. That means we can interactively move around, and we get something like typically 60 frames per second. Yeah, a computer game is the typical application. For a computer game, it doesn't make sense to wait 8 hours for a single frame. You really need to have 60, typically 60 frames per second. And if you think about that, I mean, people are used to seeing computer games all the time. Yeah, and it's very common, but if you think about it, how much there is to compute to get a single image in a computer game. Yeah, if you have full HD resolution, which is quite common, that's 2 million pixels. So you have to compute 2 million single little colors, and you don't have to do that once, but you have to do that 60 times per second. Yeah, it's an enormous amount. And I still find it incredible that it's possible, but obviously it works. Okay, so here an example for photorealism. So cars are very good for computer graphics, in particular if there's nobody sitting inside. They are the reflection properties of metal or car paint are rather simple to describe. The geometry usually already is available for the computer because it has been designed on the computer. Yeah, so it doesn't have to be remodeled somehow. So cars can be rendered really in a way that I would say it's not as distinguishable from reality. And also, in fact, if you see a car somewhere in an advertisement, let it be printed or on TV or in the cinema or so, you can rely on the fact that it's not a real car, but it's a rendered car. Yeah, or at least some parts have been changed afterwards. Yeah, but usually it's rendered. that's another view. So in fact, these are images here that have been generated by a company that's a spin-off of our chair, and they generated these nice images for a big Bavarian car manufacturer. And the goal was to make it in a quality that you can use it in a catalog. Yeah? And of course, BMW is very keen on having nice images. They should not look crappy. These are maybe not that nice images, but it's also a more difficult setting here. So the important point here is that these are globally illuminated images. What does that mean? So here we have this room obviously is lit by the sun that comes through the window, but there are two important or nice interesting effects. So first of all, this shadow here is not hard. That doesn't mean you don't have a direct transition from lit to shadowed, but there's a smooth transition because the sun is not a point, obviously, but it has some diameter. Even from the large distance to Earth, you still see it as a disk on the sky. And thus, it doesn't in reality, it doesn't generate hard shadows, but such soft shadows. And that's quite not complicated, but costly to compute such soft shadows. And the other more interesting effect, maybe, is that also the parts that are not directly hit by the sun receive light. This is now indirect illumination. So the light bounces off the table, for instance, illuminates the wall, and then light comes to the camera. And there can be many bounces in between. And simulating this is notoriously expensive. So such global illumination solutions take very long. And so this is now in large, the example that I showed you before. So that's such a, building. and atrium. Yeah, that's the word. And now here, such a method to compute the global lighting, also the indirect lighting, has been applied. And you see, after 1 minute, you get an image. You can recognize the geometry, but obviously the lighting simulation is not converged yet. And after 4 hours and 30 minutes, we get a nicer solution. But if you look closer or directly on the screen, you will see that it's still not perfect. And after something like 17 hours and 30 minutes, we arrive at something which we would call a converged solution. Yeah, so that's very, very time intensive. Of course, there are faster methods to do that, but not interactive. Or there are interactive methods, but they don't get this quality by far. Okay, and now maybe. I'm lucky. And this one works. Ah, this one does. Oh, okay. So, So first of all, I would like to, Okay, so what we see here now is an example for interactive rendering, just to show you you all know that from computer games, but maybe you never really thought about that, yeah? So interactive rendering, what can we achieve in interactive quality? And So this is an example of a car again. Yeah, and if we switch to another way to display that car, we can see that this car has been modeled by a number of triangles. Yeah, so this is not the representation that the designer usually is editing. Yeah, because with this representation, with all these tiny triangles, it would just be impossible to change the overall shape of the engine hood or something like that. Yeah, because you would have to pick millions of little vertices or triangles and move them slightly. Instead, it's a mathematical description, a polynomial surface, or many polynomial surfaces. These can be edited in a more natural way, and then they are converted to triangles to render the object. And yeah, these are millions of triangles. I don't remember how many, but really quite a few. Yeah, the entire interior of the car, that's all modeled and all represented with such triangles. And these triangles are rendered by a modern GPU without any problems in real time. Yeah, so you can render these several million or 50 million triangles or something like that at 60 hertz. That means 60 times per second. 60 millions would be too much. And yeah, just here again. So there are some issues. Maybe I can already show you. So if you look at that part here, these little strips, and if we go further away, you will realize that there's a flickering. Oops. Look at here. Can you see that? These patterns or weird patterns that appear, they disappear when you get close enough. But that's a very typical problem of rendering, one of the oldest problems of rendering. We call it aliasing. And in fact, many people say that it's an unsolvable problem. I mean, it can be reduced for particular cases, but for a general solution, nobody has found yet. Okay. Yeah, so that's just to give you a kind of impression. Yeah, so we have on the one side, we have high quality rendering, taking hours, and we have interactive rendering. But in this lecture, we will in fact describe the fundamentals of rendering independent of real time or high quality rendering. The basics are the same, so we will describe the basics of computer graphics algorithms. The rendering process is typically described as a pipeline. There are a number of steps to convert a big set of triangles to a big set of pixels. And it's a nice way to organize all these algorithms along the pipeline. So we will see all the steps of the graphics pipeline and describe all these steps. One goal is also, via the programming tutorials at least, to give you basic skills to implement simple programs that do graphics, that render such objects. What we will not discuss in this lecture is speak about software packages, yeah, libraries that do nice rendering stuff, etc. Yeah, we really do the basics, the algorithms. Artistic skills. That's something we are obviously lacking, and it's really two very different communities. Yeah. So in whatever animation studios that do these films, if you just look at the trailer, you will see that they have hundreds of artists and modelers and whatever, and then there comes the technical stuff, and that's a few only. Yeah. So only a few write the programs, and then the animation and stuff like that, this is done by artists. Yeah, that's something very different. We won't speak about that. Yeah, does it make sense to print green text on a red background or something like that? Yeah, this is something we will not speak about. We will also not speak about game design and implementation. That would be a topic on its own, but we won't discuss that here. And we will also not discuss the differences between specific APIs, DirectX or OpenGL or whatever is around there, HTML5 with ray tracing and stuff like that. Yeah, we won't speak about that here. But ideally, after the lecture, you have the knowledge that it's very easy for you to understand the differences. Yeah, that's the goal. So what will we speak about then a bit more in detail? Rasterization, yeah, this problem here. We will speak about projections, so all this camera stuff. How is a 3D point projected into a 2D image? That's a very interesting theory behind that. And you're all kind of related with that because the Erlangen mathematician Felix Klein, so the new building is also named after him, he was also really a pioneer in describing transformations and projections, and he developed a very unifying theory to describe such projections here, things like this, yeah? We will learn about that, how that works, and how we can use this to really, in a very elegant way, to describe all these different projections by applying a 4x4 matrix. Okay, then illumination models. How do we describe the reflection of light off surfaces? A very simple model that's very widely used in computer graphics is a physically not plausible one, but it works nicely, but there are also more physically based models that we will also learn. And then there are other topics, visibility, that's quite simple, yeah, things like that. We will learn a very simple variant. Modeling, just the basics to be able to generate images. Color models, that's a important point also. I mean, it's probably everybody of you knows that our perception of color is rather limited, so we can only differentiate is the wrong word, but we have three frequency-dependent receptors in the eye, red, green, for red, green, and blue, and they overlap and so on. They are very, very weird effects, and we will discuss that, and also textures, how can we further visually improve objects here. Okay, as textbooks, I can recommend this book here by Pete Shirley, Fundamentals of Computer Graphics. I think the third revision is still the current one from 2009, and there should be a number of these available in the library. And I'm not sure. Often it's worth to have a look at Google Books. There are often really not very old books already available at Google Books. But we should also have copies available in the library. Another book here, Computer Graphics with OpenGL. There are, for OpenGL, there are a number of books available. So it doesn't really make sense to recommend a particular one. It depends on what you prefer. And there are, for OpenGL, it's probably does even more make sense to look for tutorials on the web. There are thousands of tutorials for OpenGL to learn OpenGL programming. With little tutorials that probably even helps more. And there's one classic book on computer graphics, Foley van Damfijne Hughes, Principles, Computer Graphics Principles and Practice. It's very thick. It's also quite expensive, but we also have a number of copies available. And it's pretty old, but for the basics, it's still very valuable and a good read. It's well written and self-contained, and it's really a good book. Okay, another number of OpenGL books. I think it doesn't make sense to. You can look it up on the slides when I put them on the web. Just let me briefly also describe applications of computer graphics. Computer graphics is, meanwhile, a mature field in computer science, and computer graphics is omnipresent, I would say. In many applications, you can see that. Typical examples are special effects in movies, video games, also in engineering for designers. Computer graphics is very widely used. In simulation, you need computer graphics to visualize results and not only see rows of numbers, but real to see the results. Medical imaging is also a very important topic, yeah, displaying 3D data from inside the human body and stuff like that. So just examples from design, and of course also these technical stuff, yeah, that's very, very easy to display and to render also. Yeah, developing objects, all done on the computer today. And of course you need to be able to also display that. And if you have a more complex object like that, it's very interesting. How can I make inside or internal structures visible and stuff like that. Driving simulation, so that's an example of a driving simulator with BMW in Munich. So it's a big projection dome. It's big enough so that an entire car, so there's a big bridge and you can drive in an entire car, and then there's a 360 degree projection or 180 degree projection that projects a virtual environment, and so you can make virtual test drives. And it's on a motion platform, so the entire dome then moves before you have to remove that bridge, and then it moves and it gives you acceleration and stuff like that. Medical imaging, I think our university does quite a few on that, so you saw many of these images already before. Another thing, mobile graphics. So more and more graphics is also coming to mobile devices. Mobile phones have graphics cards built in. They are not, by far not, as powerful as on a desktop, but they are catching up, and I think the latest announcement of NVIDIA says something like 256 cores on a mobile on a mobile CPU. So a lot will happen there. These are images from a 3D navigation system here. And it's the images are not the newest, so the 3D renderings are much much nicer now, and these things improve more and more. Okay. So just a few remarks on our group, on our chair. I already said, maybe if you're interested in doing bachelor thesis or so, it makes sense to give you a little bit of little impression what we are doing. So we are two professors, Günter Greiner and me. Then we have three permanent staff, where Thomas Wittenberg is in fact from Fraunhofer IES. He's also supervising lots of bachelor thesis and so on, more in a medical application domain. And then we have a number of PhD students. And I think one specialty of our chair is that we have quite a few cooperations with industry, with companies. So right now I have a PhD student with Microsoft, one PhD student with Disney Animation Studio. We have a master thesis together with Activation Blizzard. Looking at the web pages, I'm not too keen on that, I must admit. Then with Siemens Healthcare, eSolutions, that's a company here in Tennenlohe, and Elektrobit probably that's all where we have bachelor and master thesis is running with. Furthermore, we have a research training group. That's the translation for the German word Graduiertenschule. That's a kind of rather big research project funded by the German Science Foundation. And here we are looking in image systems together with other groups of computer science and of electrical engineering. So this goes from smart cameras. That means a camera that has processing, image processing, for instance, directly on the camera chip or at least inside the camera, so that it already delivers relevant information with a video stream and other things up to computer games, high quality graphics and stuff like that. And this is quite big. It's 25 PhD students, and we also have research students there. So good students that are also working within that group, and then that participate in all the meetings and stuff like that. Okay, oh, and now another three videos. I hope we are more lucky now. Oh yeah, okay. So that's just a few research things that we did. So in this paper here, what happens here is that, okay, I should. So the, oops. Okay, sorry, I clicked. Oh, why can't I stop? Okay. 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 So what you see is a person running on sand, and the interesting thing is that the feet leave steps in the ground, and per se that's not difficult. Yeah. But the special thing here is that. All these computations, the entire computations run on the GPU. So we have a nice representation how these deformed surfaces or how these surfaces can be deformed. And whenever an object hits the ground is deformed such that the shape of the object is removed. So if you replace the feet from that person running around, for instance, yeah, by a robot or something like that, the footprints will automatically change. Yeah, respectively. And okay. Okay, and here you see how geometry is inserted. So the sand is a quite coarse geometry, and then where the footsteps are, geometry is inserted. Now this can also be used for sculpting, so to change the scene, yeah, to model objects, whatever, to apply impacts that are automatically decaying out again and stuff like that. Yeah. Okay, it's very very short clips. Then. Okay, this is from a paper on soft shadows. So I already spoke about this, that we need, or that it's a one typical goal to not get hard shadows, but to have softened shadows here. Yeah, and this is a representation that we were thinking about to generate such soft shadows, and that's in fact not the part I wanted to show. That probably comes here. Okay. Yeah, so that's one of the results. So you see it's generating these soft shadows at 80 frames per second, and there's one interesting thing. So this object, this tree, is pretty close to the wall, so it generates a rather sharp shadow. This object is more distant, so the shadow is already softer, and now this woman walking by generates an even softer shadow. Now the soft and the hard shadows overlap, and that's a typical problem where most algorithms have problems. And yeah, it got stuck, right? Okay, there's all this explanation. Okay, it's not visible on the projector. but I'm pretty sure here it will be visible. Now that's another scene, and here you can see that when we get closer. You see here this shadow of the flag and of this lantern, and the shadow of that grid here. So that's very soft, and the lantern is very hard. This shadow, yeah, it's very detailed. And other methods completely fail for that. Yeah, so that's the kind of state of the art on that, and it, yeah, light is leaking through, and so here a student developed a method to solve that. And in fact, it was also a master thesis, or it started with a master thesis, but then we developed that further. This is another topic. This is not a master thesis. And it's something all of you know, or I'm pretty sure that all of you know Kinect. It's a device for the Xbox, for a game console. And it's a camera, and the image generated by that camera, you can see here, it's a camera that delivers per pixel a depth value. Yeah, so it tells you per pixel how far is that visible point away from the camera. And it delivers a very crappy picture. So the silhouettes are not really correct. There are parts are missing and so on, but it's enough to record a player standing in front of that device, and you all saw that probably already. Yeah. So when you're moving around, it can figure out, okay, there's a person, and it has this pose, and then it can transfer this to a game character, and you can control your game character by moving around with that. And so for that, the Kinect is fine, but what we wanted to use them for is really to capture 3D scenes, like this room here. Yeah. But unfortunately, these input images are very, very noisy. They have holes and so on. But what you can do is that if you move around and take many of these pictures and fuse them, you can generate very nice and also very smooth and noise-free 3D models. And this is happening here. Yeah? Here you see an input stream, the depth, and the camera. And from that, we can generate this 3D model. And this is the same 3D model, but with a RGB, so with the input values projected on it. And yeah, so there are several examples running. Yeah, see, it works on different kinds of objects. And I just wanted to... Okay, yeah. So here you see then, for instance, yeah, that's a long row of statues in the, yeah, here at our university in the Kochstraße, which is closed now. So we were there 1 week before it had to be shut down, and yeah, it's a row of statues, and we walked by with a camera and then generated this 3D model from that. Okay. Yeah, so that's just to give you a kind of impression what we are doing in our group. But okay, there's still some way to go to here. So first of all, we have to think about the basics of computer graphics and how to rasterize single triangles and stuff like that. And we will start with that on Thursday, and it was 1:15, right? On Thursday. Okay, so see you then. Thank you.